Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And today we are doing something different, and we're going to be highlighting the work out of Agile Evolutionary Group. And I'm actually shifting the quote unquote host over to our executive producer of Voices for Excellence, Serena Reynolds. So Serena, I am actually going to be the guest and you are going to be the host. So this is going to be something of an anomaly for me now, where now I'm sitting in the seat as a guest within VFE. So to our new host for this episode, Serena, take it away.
So hi everyone, I'm Serena Reynolds from the UK, and I've been working with Michael for a few years now, and we thought this would be a fun twist to what normally happens. He talks a lot to other guests. We find out about what they're doing and how they're developing and all the wonderful things that are going on in education. And we just thought that this was a really good opportunity to put Michael on the spotlight and hear about Agile Evolutionary Group, his AI platform, as well as everything else that's going on. So, Dr. Connor, I believe we had a big announcement yesterday. Would you like to share that with people?
Oh, wow. Yes. Very extraordinary. I didn't think you were going to bring this and put me on the spot like this. But yeah, yesterday I was announced as one of the district administration top 100 education influencers for 2025. Still in awe, Serena, because, you know, when you look at the other 99 individuals on that list, those are what I call heavy hitters, right? Really big influencers in the education ecosystem, really making big, bold changes within the field. And just to be a part of that list and to have individuals in the education ecosystem consider me to be influencer. We know that we don't do the work, you know, for awards or recognitions. We do it, you know, for impact and to change people's lives. But to receive this recognition, it was truly an honor. But again, you know, it's the people that you surround yourself with. So Serena, thank you for being a part of this recognition, as well as all the other people that have helped me throughout this new journey, this entrepreneurship or edupreneurship journey, this leadership journey around global impact. So as I always like to say, Serena, onward to 3 million students, and we always have to stop and celebrate the short-term wins. So as I sent out many messages yesterday, thanking people for contributing to this recognition, I couldn't do it alone. And specifically the people that has really lifted me, lifted my voice and lifted the work. So what an honor and recognition for not just me, but for the individuals that are a part of this journey and part of this path of trajectory and impact.
It's fabulous. I'm so proud of you and so pleased to be part of this team. So congratulations. I think it's great. So let's lead on from there. Let's stop embarrassing you and let's jump into. So, Michael, if you were going to walk into a boxing ring or whatever ring you like, an educational ring of big heavy hitters, what's your theme tune?
Oh, man. So I've asked this question so many times on my podcast and I've really never thought about it. And now thinking about it, I have kept with the one theme song for years that if I had an introduction, what would it come out? What I come out to? And people know that they've heard me say this, James Brown Superbad. And the reason why I say James Brown Superbad is because when we think about, you know, shifting education policy, shifting structures and systems for the future to get ready for the 22nd century, this major paradigm shift in the way we think and operate in education, we have to be super bad and super bad in a positive way, so that we can make these changes, scale them, and they become systematized for our students, you know, for the ecosystem. And I think that we have to be different. And when we're different, that's considered quote unquote bad, but super bad, because we have to accelerate it to prepare for this 22nd century that we need to talk about more. So of course, you know, I love James Brown. James Brown has been, you know, one of my all-time favorites, but definitely have to be James Brown Superbad.
Let's jump into the 22nd century. Let's talk about the future of education is now. Let's talk about the work that you're doing around this at the moment and your AI platform. So let's start at the very beginning. Where has all this started from? Let's have a brief overview of what it is and then where we've started from.
Yeah, so the Agile Diagnostic and AI platform, and then we have a GPT system that's embedded in the platform that we're calling the Systems AI Navigator. In essence, what we're doing, Serena, and a really simplified explanation, high level, we're taking data and we're taking that data and using it in this advanced way, analytics, right? And what we're doing is we're bringing the analytics and the data together to drive strategy within continuous improvement and change management. So now once we analyze all of that data, take all that data from the districts, we actually put all that information into this GPT system. And within the GPT system, that's the AI, and it generates outputs with strategies, with potentials, even get down to the depth and breadth of identifying targeted next steps for district leaders or school improvement leaders. So in essence, we're taking data, analytics, and AI and bringing it all together. But here's the caveat, Serena. The actual platform and GPT Navigator is aligned to my research and my frameworks that I've developed, the disruptive effect model and the 22nd century education model. So it really is this strategic conglomerate, pretty much all of the sciences, data, AI, and strategy all in one so that leaders can use, so that now they can make those changes and those transformations in a strategic and prescriptive and descriptive way.
So what kind of data is it that you're using and what's the outcome for these districts?
Amazing, amazing question. So the data that we're using is what we call in the platform world within ourselves, right? We call static data. And the static data essentially are your traditional measures that schools, traditional measures and metrics that schools use across the country and across the world. So it could be your standard benchmark assessment data. It could be your high stakes standardized assessment data, SAT data, graduation rates, enrollment rates, demographic data, climate and culture information. So that's what we call the static data that we collect. We want to collect usually roughly 3 to 5 years of that data from that district.
So is it linked to individual students or is it more of a package data?
Yeah, so for data privacy aspects of it, we don't identify targeted students, right? But we collect that aggregate, but disaggregate it down by grade level, by specific trends over years and over time. But we don't have that single identifier of students because, again, protection laws and privacy laws that we have to adhere to. But we take all of that aggregate and disaggregated data. And then here's the caveat. This is where now we bring in other outlier data, I like to say. This is from a diagnostic that we created. We created 3 different diagnostics so that districts can be able to take. And they're aligned to the 5 pillars within my Anchors of Innovation Science framework. Lean practices, big data and analytics, AI and digital reimagination, strategy, and culture and strategy. Culture is always first. And we look at culture from a digital culture lens and strategy from a fusion strategy lens. Now, within those diagnostics, we have specific questions that are weighted, that has priority and secondary weights, meaning one pillar might have more weight within that question than another pillar. So we targeted priority and secondary weights. Once we have all that data from the district, we start to run what we call, we run those models. And then now we start to understand the relationships between the static data that we collected, the benchmark school data, formative assessment information. And then we look at the relationship with specific questions from the diagnostic. Based off of that, that model provides us insight and information on ways a district can improve or strengthen their continuous improvement efforts, change management efforts within each of those five pillars. So as an example would be, let's hypothetically say that a district, one of the areas that they have to improve on is reading instruction. But now the diagnostic is saying that you can improve reading instruction exponentially by adding specific AI tools in certain areas of instruction. So that now we start making those recommendations where we're not just looking at the traditional approach to teaching reading, but now how we can teach reading with AI as a strategic tool to advance achievement. So once we get that information, right, those, I like to say statistical insights, those potentials and implications, all of that information, Serena, is ingested into the GPT Navigator. And the GPT Navigator is the AI assistant, like what we call. So now, just like as you're prompting within a regular GPT system, you can get very granular and very explicit with your prompts based on your school, because the AI that we built is only using the data and the information from that district. So that now you can have outputs from the GPT system that says Serena in grade 3 will need to add or scaffold AI into reading instruction in this way, quarter by quarter, minute by minute, month by month. So it works as if it's like a chat GPT, but it's really focused on continuous improvement and using the research and science from my framework.
So who does that benefit? Does it benefit the district, the school, the students, even though it's not directly linked to student data? How does that work?
It benefits everybody, right? Because ultimately, what we want to do is impact the classroom. The decisions that we're making, whether it be from very broad change management at the high organizational level, or even school improvement at the school level, ultimately, these recommendations, and I like to say GPT outputs from our AI, it impacts the classroom. It impacts instruction. It impacts how teachers teach. It impacts how leaders make decisions. And ultimately, all of that, we wanted to influence what? Student outcomes for Generation Alpha and Generation Beta. So even though it might be making recommendations at the very high level, the organizational level, or even making recommendations at the school level, ultimately, what do we want to do? Improve teaching and learning and improve student outcomes for students.
So where did this all come from? What birthed this idea?
I will never forget, I was in a midterm at Harvard, and we had to build these recommender systems, and we were coding in the back and, you know, testing out the code and testing out, you know, for if the recommender system is aligning with some of the recommendations and playing around with the data. And I was, you know, really, really immersed in change management and continuous improvement. And I said to myself, and this was like 7-8 years ago, Serena, I remember I said to myself, wow, if we could build something that emulates a recommender system for educational change management and continuous improvement, this would help leaders out a lot with time, with strategy, alignment with the work with key stakeholders in the learning organization. So
this
I have
long before AI was in the mainstream. I mean, AI is now only a couple of years. So you're really like advanced here. So sorry, I just wanted to.
Serena, I can actually give you the year. This was 2019. I will never forget because my graduation from the Harvard Business Analytics program was in January 2020. If you remember, that was the start of COVID. And I was in the program from academic year 18 and academic year 19. So I was actually thinking about this because I was an executive leader at that time. And I was thinking about it, and I was like, this guy, I was like, there has to be some synergy between change management, continuous improvement, and me just, you know, coding on the back and developing a recommender system and a simulated midterm. So I went on this kind of like this like journey of trying to find a change management or continuous improvement type of platform, or I was thinking dashboard, right? That had these embedded capabilities of descriptive analytics, predictive analytics, and prescriptive analytics. Serena, it didn't exist. I could not find it. And you know me, I've researched everywhere to try to get this platform so I can implement simultaneously within my change management process of my strategic operating plan. Couldn't find it. So then I was like, you know what? I'm going to play around with different programming to now leverage my strategic operating plan because it's not here. So Serena, I was using, and this is where I started getting like really like geeking out, RStudio, SQL, Python. I was doing presentations using Tableau with various visualizations and comparing visualizations around to enhance our strategic performance management process in the district. So I remember saying, and he's a cohort one graduate, shout out to Dr. Houston Barber. He's the deputy superintendent of Fayette County Public Schools in Kentucky. And he's a graduate, and we were one of the only, you know, two or three educators that were in there. And I said to Houston, I said, wouldn't it be great if somebody built a system with like AI and analytics to do change management and continuous improvement? And I would never forget what Houston said to me. Houston said, Mike, somebody would figure out a very, very hard problem if they built that. This was 2020. And since he said that, that's when I said, one day I'm going to build this. Literally, I didn't know when. I just said, one day I'm going to build this. I thought it was going to be later in my life, Serena, like after retirement or something like that. And again, it just about 2 years ago, after I wrote my book, that's when I said, this is going to be the next endeavor. And I have to find somebody crazy enough that will help me build this. And that's
where, and you didn't find him. Did it yourself.
Right. And then when I met, and then here's the great part. I met Daniel Crook at EdTech Week. And we were standing in line. Shout out to Daniel. And it was, I always said when Harry met Sally, right? Like that movie, because we were in line, the line was long. And I said, hey, listen, I got this crazy idea and I need somebody crazy enough to build it. Would you think about it? And I told him my idea. He was like, yeah, I can build it. And then from there, here we are with the Agile Diagnostic and AI Platform and Systems AI Navigator. But in essence, it was essentially birthed out of a concept from a simulation that I did at Harvard.
So let's just say that name again really, really slowly so everyone can hear what it is.
The name of it is the Agile Diagnostic and AI Platform. And we have the AI platform that's embedded in there where it could operationalize as a standalone, which is called the Systems AI Navigator.
And people can contact you now if they want to find out more about that.
Absolutely. Please contact me, email me. Usually, Serena, I know at the end, I ask participants and guests for their emails, but I'm going to break some rules on VFE today. Anybody that's interested in it, please email me at m.conner, C-O-N-N-E-R, at agileevolutionarygroup, all one word, .com.
That will be on the podcast notes and his website and Voices for Excellence website. So, Dr. Conner, let's talk about the frameworks which the AI platform is built around, which is something that you were building pre the platform.
Yes. So I like to say the legacy framework that was built, that's embedded in my book, Intentional, Bold, and Unapologetic, A Guide to Transforming Schools in the AC Stage of Education. AC Stage of Education is after COVID-19. Within my book, Serena, I break it up into three time frames or time phases of the BC Stage of Education before COVID, D DC stage, which is during COVID, and just what we just highlighted, the AC stage, which is after COVID-19. So within my book, the framework that was designed, developed, launched is the disruptive effect model. And the disruptive effect model, in essence, is pretty much two frameworks working as one, where we call the anchors of innovation science. Those are the five pillars that really anchors us to the 22nd century. And then we have the disruptive excellence framework, which is more in the lines of the rooted work that we have to do to get us to the 22nd century. So I always like to say this, is that the anchors of innovation science is more systems thinking, and then the disruptive excellence framework is more system shifting. So now that thinking and shifting are working in reciprocity with one another. And that's essentially what the platform is built on, the five pillars of the anchors of innovation science, and the recommendations and the outputs is aligned to the disruptive excellence framework. So I like to say that's the legacy framework around systems thinking and systems shifting. Five pillars within the anchors of innovation science is lean practices, the first pillar. The second pillar is big data and analytics. The third pillar is AI digital reimagination. Now we're seeing an over-perseveration on pillar three, because that's where now a lot of people are focusing on AI, disruptive technologies and education. The fourth pillar is culture, and the fifth pillar is strategy. I always like to say these five pillars are outside of education, because I always say innovation is defined as creative solutions by borrowing from different industries to address our problem of practice. So traditionally in education, historically, we never used lean practices, never had the capabilities or the platforms for to launch big data and analytics. And of course, now we're seeing this revolutionary approach and paradigm around AI and what does digital reimagination look like. So, and then the other two, culture and strategy, are very, very important. So those are the five pillars within the anchors of innovation science.
So you're rushing forward with the next century of education. Do you want to talk a little bit towards that?
We have to. And the reason why I say we have to is we're one of the only, I like to say, industries where customer feedback and being customer centric, we haven't really changed the model for our customers. Any other industry, like I used this example actually yesterday, Serena. If we're selling, let's say, ice cream, right? And our customers, they're saying, Serena, Michael, your ice cream is bad and it's not going to sell because it doesn't taste well. What are we going to do? We're naturally going to go back. We're going to make the adjustments to make our ice cream better for our customers so that A, our ice cream sells, but more importantly, our customers enjoy the ice cream. I always say in education is that we've always had the same model, even when our customers are changing and our customers are demanding for something different. So this is where now we have to change because of our customers, our Generation Alpha, the generative native, and Generation Beta, who are the quantum natives. In essence, we can't continue educating our students the same way because we have two different generations that are very, very different from you and I. Moreover, the economy is changing. The economic trends are changing. The patterns are changing because of artificial intelligence, because of new technologies. Just a few weeks ago, the UAE just announced that they're giving ChatGPT-4, I believe, to everyone in the country. That is a game changer when you think about it. So when we talk about this 22nd century and the future of education is now, because of technology, because of AI, because of our students, we are rapidly approach in the 22nd century, even though we're still roughly about 75 years out. And that's where now we have to prepare our kids for this new generation. We have to prepare students for this 22nd century, because when we think about jobs now, 82% of industry jobs embed some form of AI, some form of new technology in the industry, let alone when we think about it, since the pandemic alone, roughly 74% of new jobs are created with AI in mind. So we have to be able to change our model. We have to be able to change how we teach. We have to be able to change how we instruct our students, because our customers are radically changing and the world is changing around us rapidly.
I mean, we're in a state of flux here. I can see this in my own industry and what I do. And I'm seeing a lot of talk around the what used to be considered the thinking jobs, the high-end jobs, the safe jobs, things like, you know, becoming a lawyer, law degrees and things like that are now being, you know, I mean, how do you see this future panning out, Michael? How do you see if we continue using old methods? How do you see that affecting our children?
We're not adequately preparing students for the necessary talent to be able to navigate efficiently and effectively in a world that is rapidly changing. One thing, Serena, I always say that everybody now has the globe in their hands because of technology, because of AI. So when we think about it, if we're just developing students from the skills and competencies, we really have to start thinking about how we're preparing our students for global competitiveness. That's why I always say within my 22nd century systems learner framework, that's a part of the 22nd century education model that I created. We have to develop Generation Alpha and Generation Beta's multi-environmental talents. And what I mean by that is that they're going to be living in this multifunctional, multidimensional world where now it's not going to be around just specific competencies or skills, but we have to be able to develop their holistic talents to be able to globally compete. The standardization of, hey, lawyers, doctors is going to be very important. But again, we're starting to see technology infiltrate those industries. Now, Serena, I don't know when the last time you went to your medical physician, but what do we see now? We see medical doctors and practitioners, they're asking a lot of questions and they're putting it into the computer. That's where now AI is really starting to change the medical field with specific recommendations about that patient. I'm like, wow, that's decision tree analysis going on right there on the back end. Are you doing this? Are you feeling this? Are you doing this? And then the AI targets the recommendation where the medical practitioner provides that recommendation, human intelligence and artificial intelligence together. That's where now we're going to see a lot of that merging. And then also when you're talking about these jobs, yeah, automation. Automation is going to be a huge factor in multiple industries. But again, it's how do we leverage the talents with AI in those different industries, and automation playing a huge factor in the role now. So we have to start preparing because it's inevitable, to be honest with you.
Wow. I mean, when I was a student, I'd have to go to the library. That was effort. Now they literally have it in the palm of their hands. It's amazing. So this is really exciting for the students coming forward. And there's lots of questions about AI and where it's going to go. I think my take on that is that it's here to stay. What's yours on where do you stand?
Is you know, when I think about my platform, and I was just speaking with Daniel and we were talking about where we're at with the platform, the AI is really good right now, but guess what? It's only going to get better. So we always say every day that the AI in our platform is at its worst state because of the fact that AI is getting better every day. The data that we're getting is becoming better, more available, accessible with that. And as you stated, right, it's here. And it's going to be a part of every single thread of our life. I read something, I want to say a few weeks ago, that one out of every 3 seconds, an individual is interacting with some form of AI in their life.
It's me. I'm sorry. It's definitely me doing it.
that is wow. I mean, when you think about that, Serena, one out of every 3 seconds we're engaging with some type of technology or AI. So you're right, Serena, it's not going anywhere. And it's going to be even, I like to say, the scope of implementation is going to be deeper. So we in education, we're going to have to continue to explore and experiment new ways of bringing this in to the multiple threads of our model.
So here's going to be a really tough question for you. And we're coming to the end of our time here, so I'm going to be quick. How does your platform navigate this humongous shift in education and the world and global thinking?
Yeah, I believe that my platform navigates this is that the greatest thing that we have that we lever is data, right? And I think that with the static data, and I like to say, and then the diagnostic data, it eliminates all of the noise and it gets down to the core of what the work looks like based off of the district and where they're at and how we can define the steps to be able to accomplish moving districts and schools to this 22nd century education model. And you stated it earlier, Serena, we have really, really good conversations. We have really good discussions about what this change looks like and how we can apply and execute this transformation in a strategic way. I think the gap is how do we do this and how is this applied strategically over time? And that's where the platform really is levered into whether it be a district or whether it be a school internationally, whether it be a ministry, is that we take those great conversations that we have of where we want to go, those vision, I like to say those visionary mandates and demands that we articulate that we have to do. And now we put them in an actionable manner, context that is meaningful for that district and how we strategically get there over time.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. It sounds so complex to me, and I'm sure many others. So it was really good to have that broken down. So we are actually coming up to the end of the podcast. So Michael, how do people contact you about your platform? I know we've already done this, but let's do it again.
Absolutely, Serena. Thank you. They can contact me by going through or going to the website, agileevolutionarygroup.com. And then they can also email me at m.conner, C-O-N-N-E-R, at all one word, agileevolutionarygroup.com.
Thank you very much for your time today, Dr. Conner. Onwards and upwards.